Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz and TJ Henning.
Welcome to it, the Thursday edition, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, TJ Henning, a loaded show for you. Historian, author, Hall of Famer, our very own with Hail Varsity, 39 years of football and Nebraska excellence, Mike Babcock, 15 minutes away, his thoughts on the alternate uniforms. His thoughts on the Hall of Fame inductees for the 2017 class. And we'll talk some offensive line with Babbers. If you miss Jim Rome and Mike Riley, we have some excerpts of that later this hour. We'll be happy to share with you. In hour two, a native Nebraskan and tremendous writer, Lars Anderson, is on to talk some college football. Lars has a story coming out tomorrow on the Sadler, Fultz, and Delahousse families on Bleacher Report. So that is next hour in hour two. Lars Anderson will be with us. And then Big Ten Networks and the coach, Jerry DiNardo. We'll get caught up with Coach, get his thoughts on how media days went for him, and to get his take on Nebraska, because he was able to do some one-on-ones with the BTN crew, with Coach Riley, many other coaches, and I know camp is now a few days away yet, and approaching, but we'll get his thoughts on what he thinks of Nebraska, and he'll know more when he visits and sees things in person, but just kind of the general outline. Can tap the line today, Shillingbridge Cork and Tap House. Dial us up, 466-3776, 466-3776, 1-800-825-5865. Can tap the line, Shillingbridge Cork and Tap House. On Twitter, at Hail Varsity, at Schmidt underscore radio, at TJ underscore Henning. And the email is chris@hailvarsity.com. You send it, we will read it. Four tickets, four VIP tickets for you to Salt Dogs Baseball Sunday?
Monday.
So Monday VIP tickets to the Salt Dogs. We'll give a four-pack of those away. It also gets you qualified to get a six-month online subscription to HailVarsity.com. Okay, tipping the cap to 1997. Some of us were alive and well. Some of us were young and impressionable. And some of you weren't around. That's okay. And I want to talk Nebraska and alternate uniforms, because when this day happens, it's either yay or nay. And then there's some middle ground as well. I love this.
You love the alternate uniforms, or you love these specifically?
I love these specifically.
Okay. Love's a strong word.
No, I love them because I love the Nebraska football uniform. In 1997, it was a championship year, an incredible team. A team that you'll remember forever because of how they won, specifically the Missouri game. They were dominant for 99.9% of the season, and then they slapped around Peyton Manning. That was all impressive, but these uniforms were just clean and beautiful and nice looking. I mean, you'd been with Adidas since 95, but this 97 uniform was simple. It's classic. You can't go wrong. It's kind of like a blue sport coat or a black sport coat. It's something you got to have in your closet, and it looks nice. You go stay out in the Vontae, and then you wear it. It's good. But in 97, it's taking you back. And listen, the last throwback uni they did, I think, was maybe the first alternate uniform was in 09, or might have been 08. Might have been 08. An ode to the 60s team, where you had the white helmet with the numbers on the helmet, yeah, and then the classic red. That was cool.
That was good.
And the electric white roadie games with the chrome last year at Northwestern, I didn't hate.
I'm a fan of chrome.
I'm more superstitious back in my fan days of just their record wearing all white. That was the issue with me.
Mm-hmm.
And then, quite frankly, the rest of them have sucked, with the exception of the All Black was kind of cool. I didn't hate that. I thought the outcome during that All Black uniform game was a little frustrating. If maybe you had money on a team that was supposed to wear red that was wearing black that day. But the alternate uniform to 97, if you're going to pick a team to tip the cap to, you absolutely do it to the 97 team. It's your last championship team. It set the table for a really good 99 team. And then we know where we're at since then. And I don't mind this alternate uniform game against Wisconsin being a throwback uniform game.
Good, not great. That's how I rank it. So I am definitely in the middle
ground. What is wrong with you?
It's like they're not horrible, but they're just not overly great. Like, I like that they're
What's not great about them?
I like that they're doing the mesh. But if we're going full mesh, come on. Let's see some hairy belly buns. Let's see some abs. Let's cut these things in half.
Puppy. Select few.
Let's go back.
That can go crop. That can go crop top. Okay? If you had a six-pack like Zeke did against Ohio State, fine. But listen, those linemen back in the day.
That was great.
No, it wasn't. Those linemen back in the day would look you in the eye and say, I wish my shirt was longer. And depending on how you've aged, they would say it.
Yeah, look, man, I think they should go crop top if they're going mesh. I think that'd be really cool just for one game. Who cares? Let's do it. Give you something to look forward to, but they're not bad. I like them. They're good. Not great.
It's fine. What would you prefer then?
Let me ask you this. Are you gonna go blacks?
Are you gonna go buy one, or are you just gonna take the one you have from 97?
I already got one.
Yeah, and Grandpa's hooked you up. You got a closet full.
And it's a legit crop top.
No, I know. So okay, when they play Wisconsin,
I guess I could wear that.
Are you gonna wear it to the game?
I could if I go.
It's first part of October. It could be awful, but who knows? We're in Nebraska.
I better go to Subway more or something.
Yeah, I'm not going to judge you as far as whether or not you can pull the crop top off.
I'm no Zeke.
I would look like Homer Simpson with a crop top on. I'm a little frustrated. My hair's better.
I'll hand you a donut.
Yeah.
Finish it off.
You know I would. Hall of Fame inductees for the 2017 class, and Mike Babcock will join us here in about 10 minutes with more on that. And listen, I really enjoy this time of year when you have the Hall of Fame inductees get mentioned and get honored. And we can get into some things with the defense and the offense, but listen, it's not there yet to me to go full tilt all in on third team right tackle. We can, but let's get a day of camp under our belt first. We can talk about the defense, and we'll do that with Coach DiNardo. We can get into the offensive line. We'll get into that with Mike Babcock and Coach DiNardo. But from a Hall of Fame standpoint, this is very, very sacred to a lot of guys. If they're honest with you, they don't mind the accolades. They probably feel pretty good about being recognized for their career. And there's one guy... Well, not just one, but there's several on this 2017 Hall of Fame inductee class that I feel really, really great for. And we'll have Zach Taylor crossing our fingers tomorrow. We'll also have Chad Kelce tomorrow for sure. And that's a guy I want to spend a couple minutes on is Chad Kelce. Because Chad Kelce is a guy, 95 through 98, at rush end. And think about Nebraska's rush ends, okay? Think about Nebraska's rush ends / outside linebackers from the 80s on. I mean, you had a factory of dudes that played 2 years at Nebraska after grinding their way up the depth chart because there was other NFL guys in front of them and then making their way. What I think's pretty awesome about Chad Kelce was his motor, was his determination, and then just the pride he had and still has about playing for Nebraska. I mean, he's a proud dude from Auburn High that made his way to Nebraska and then played as a true freshman and then started. And he made some plays, and he was a key part of that 1998 team. And think about the 98 team. I know we're just talking 97 throwback alternate uniform jerseys. Well, 98 was year one of Frank. 91 had the Newcomb injury. 98 also had the D'Angelo Evans stuff. And 98 was the first time that Nebraska didn't whoop anybody for 13 straight weeks. You lost four games. You lost four games to pretty good teams. But you had a win streak snapped against Texas. You didn't score an offensive touchdown against Colorado, but still dirtied one out. That was pretty cool. And you lost to Kansas State. That was a whale of a game. But 1998 was kind of a come-to-Jesus year. Tom's gone. Frank's team. What's going to happen? And Kelsey's a guy that was a monstrously injured football team in 1998. Kelsey's one of those guys that anchored it and held it together, and they got nine wins. They almost beat a top five Arizona team, and he was a local guy, Nebraska kid, with a defense that was a year away from being elite that kept them together to get that nine win number. It was already a tough year anyway. It's year one for Frank, and then you don't hit double digits. You don't win the Big 12. You go to the Holiday Bowl after living in Tempe or Miami. And Kelsey's one of those guys that kept it together, showed a lot of leadership and strength, and then passed things forward, frankly. I mean, him and Rutker on that defensive end spot. And Kelsey gutted it out. And Kelsey's he was a team dude. He was a worker. He was an attitude guy. And he's a guy that, I mean, he's one of those just let his actions speak. And he needs to be given credit. Really talented team, talented defense. But he needs to be credit for being an anchor on that team. Zach Taylor is phenomenal. Think about Nebraska football without Zach Taylor. Think about 2005, 2006, if you're still queasy from 2004 or 2007. I know Zach didn't play in 07, but, I mean, 04 and 07 hurt to watch if you're a Nebraska fan. At least you had sunshine in 05 and 06. I mean, you had the Big 12 Player of the Year offensively, led that win against A&M, was just gutsy. Jay Moore, was roommates with him, and just smiles about the guy, loves him. And I just can't imagine. I mean, does Nebraska football even bounce back as quickly in 08 after the change without Zach Taylor? Because think about who was your quarterback in 08. It was Joe Gans, who kind of groomed and tutored and mentored a Joey Gans. It was a Zach Taylor. On top of his on-field performance and his toughness and his grittiness. And yeah,
Sam Keller didn't seem the mentorship type.
No, Sam just kind of seemed to be
about Sam.
About Sam, and I didn't know Sam. Be honest with you, I just didn't. I mean, we covered him, didn't talk to him too much. So yeah, two guys that are very selfless and very talented, and one guy at a premier spot that was able to come in and wreck shop. I mean, he had some impressive wins, and he had some near wins. If guys would huddle on the football for him against Texas. But I drift away.
Yeah, man, I loved watching Zach Taylor play.
Because it was a shock to your system, right?
Yeah, first guy to throw over 3,000 yards for you. And the thing that stood out for most of me about Zach Taylor was how many times that guy took a hit.
That guy got blown up.
He got sacked. He got hit blasted so many times.
He got blasted.
He got up every time.
He wasn't mobile. And he's not a statue, but he was your drop back and 40 time. Just don't worry about running, Zach. But he was just annihilated a lot.
He was tough as nails, man.
That's why guys love him. That's why guys love him. And you got to have that attitude. And sometimes it's easier said than done at the quarterback spot, to be honest with you. And quarterback, little Hollywood, goes with the territory. Got to be gritty and gutty, and he was. And I tell you what, this was a pretty good honor. And Zach is. Yeah. Been an OC in college, and he's been in the pros quite a bit, and he was down at A&M when A&M upset Nebraska, the infamous, I'm going to scream at you, Taylor, night game down in Aggieland. Zach was on the other side with Coach Sherman at A&M.
And Tony Gerard Eddy.
Yeah.
That guy. You know, remember the guy who did the thing in the pile up to one of the cotton?
Oh, yes, yeah. Yes, to the cotton.
That's his name, Tony Gerard Eddy.
Yeah, yeah. You still laugh at that.
Well, I don't know if I laugh. I just remember it, that's for sure.
He was...
I wouldn't want to have been that guy.
No. But you know what was messed up about that? Was like it's on film. I wonder if an apology ever happened.
Yeah, that's
okay. Because you got old Ben Cotton there in the pile, and now you've gone to what goes on underneath the pile, and you got Ben Cotton there, and you got some thumb probing going on, and then you have a whole closed fist probing going on, mm-hmm. and it's more like you go to Showbiz Pizza and you're slapping the mallet down on top of the warthogs that pop up. It was that type of motion upward, not downward. Okay.
You can just tell instantly Ben was so fed up with that. He just turned around like, what are you doing? Idiot.
And then he started kicking like he was a horse. He's kicking back.
I don't blame him though.
He's kicking back. And then he gets flagged for it. Yeah. He gets pulled out. And Mount Vesuvio Pelini goes nuts. I wonder if he ever got an apology for it.
I don't know. I think you got Jake's number, or Searle's does. We can ask
I don't have Ben's, though, and Ben was the one getting lit up on.
I bet Jake knew it, maybe know.
All right, Mike Babcock coming up on Hail Varsity.
He's in his 30s, but sounds like he was born with a stogie in one hand and a brew in the other.
Now, say my name.
It's Schmitty on Hail Varsity Radio.
I got the body of a taut preteen Swedish boy.
Back at it, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Let's welcome in historian, author, Hall of Famer, 39 years and counting, covering all things Nebraska, Mike Babcock, a Hail Varsity at MD Babs on Twitter. Babbers, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Smitty. I'm doing great.
Well, appreciate the time. We got a lot to cover. I mean, Nebraska gets camp going. You have the Hall of Fame announcement for 2017. Throwback jerseys. Now, isn't it weird to say throwback 1997? I know it's been 20, but it seems like yesterday I was watching Frost pitch it and Wistrom smoke people.
Yeah. Well, when you're as old as I am and you say, throwback 2017, and then, heck, I remember those guys like that was just yesterday.
Uh-huh.
And you can probably even go back further than that and say throwback, and I think, Jesus, has that been that long?
It
seemed
like it.
It kind of all goes together. When you're having a good time, it kind of all goes together.
Oh, absolutely. Well, Mike, you're a Nebraska Football Hall of Fame voter, sir, and the class of 2017 is out. Zach Taylor, Chris Kelsey, a couple of folks, Brad Otis, and Mike, you have Donnie McGee, also played in 68, 69, and 70, all Big 8 offensive linemen. Tell me a little bit about this 2017 class. Let's start there. What's your reaction? Those are guys that you vote and you see and you weigh. I mean, you got a great responsibility, and you've done an awesome job with it. What do you think of this class?
Not a mistake in the group, two offensive linemen, Randy Tice and Donnie McGee, Zach Taylor. The funny thing, I think I've always thought this was sort of ironic, that Zach Taylor was kind of an afterthought. Hey, let's get this guy out of junior college because Harrison Beck, who's the man, he's going to need somebody to just kind of push him and, somebody that maybe he can learn from a little bit. And Zach Taylor, he started his college career at Wake Forest, mm-hmm. and then he transferred to a junior college so he could play right away after he was in junior college, and so he comes in as really kind of a people didn't expect him to be the guy certainly that he was just going to kind of help shepherd things along until Harrison Beck stepped in, and by his second year here he's the Big 12 Offensive Player of the Year. He's a great player. And of course, we know that Harrison Beck disappeared after a little over 1 year here in fall camp. Off he went, and for an instant there, Bill Callahan wasn't even sure where he was. So, Zach Taylor, What a great player he was, and what a great find. Chad Kelce, at a time, you know, Osborne teams didn't really play a lot of true freshmen. And yet, Chad Kelce stepped right in there in '95. He was one. I think they had a couple of true freshmen that made a little bit of a contribution there in '95, if I remember that correctly. By '98, he was a co-captain. That says a lot, you know, because you got your teammates voting for you for that. No-brainer. And at some point, his brother Chris is going to be in there as well. Couple Auburn guys, Auburn, Nebraska, and then, you know, Donnie McGee. I think he should have probably been in already. He was in that offensive line in 1970 that he won all conference recognition that year when Nebraska won its first national championship. A guy from Flint, Michigan. You know, he was kind of got down here, and I think he had a little bit of doubt about, you know, whether he was going to stay or not, boy, he was a grinder, and he stuck in there, and he was a good offensive lineman. And Randy Tice, I think he was from the St. Louis area, and you know, I've always said that there's a lot of talk, obviously, about the pipeline, and that, you know, that's kind of the way you define Nebraska football, you know, back in the day, is the offensive line, the national championship days. But when Randy Tice was on that offensive line in 1982, and that team got kind of the bad break of it, it had replay that year. Nebraska would have won a national championship probably because of what happened at Penn State, but Randy Tice was in that line. That was one of the best offensive lines Nebraska has had, with Remington at center. He was a senior that year. Randy Tice at that tackle. And when you get that kind of all-conference recognition, when you're playing in a line that includes Dave Remington, and I think Dean Steinkohler was a junior that year, because next year he won the Outland Trophy. It's just... It says a lot about how good Randy Tice was, and so yeah, I in the same way with Donnie McGee. I mean, he gets all conference recognition in an offensive line that includes an All-American, Bob Newton. Yeah, I think all four of those guys. I was really happy to see the list come out, and I know there's probably some deserving guys that were on the ballot, but those four guys definitely. There's no second guessing any of those four.
Mike Babcock with us, Hail Varsity Magazine, hailvarsity.com, at MD Babs on Twitter, talking about the 2017 newest members of the Nebraska Football Hall of Fame. Babbers, let's switch gears. Media days are done. Coach Riley and Chris Weber, Aaron Williams, and you have Tanner Lee. I mean, they all had a chance to say hi to a ton of folks in Chicago, and camp gets rocking here on Sunday. And let's spend some time on the offensive line. You know, Nebraska has been putting in a lot of work in the offseason, and now they get a chance to get the helmet on and work the kinks out and get ready for September. When it comes to an identity on offense, and I know it's pretty common to talk identity this time of year, but do you have a feel with the direction Nebraska will want to go from an identity standpoint? We know about Lee. We know Riley's history with throwing the ball. We also know that he's been, you know, pretty adamant about what he thinks he has on the offensive line when it comes to an experience factor and his expectation of them being good. Do you have any idea what their bread and butter can be? What can we define this team by offensively as we move forward?
Well, I think you've got it. People probably get tired of me talking about that offensive line, but that's where it starts. And you know, you had the two guys who get into the Nebraska Hall of Fame that were offensive linemen from offensive lines that were really good. And so I think that's where it starts. Now, the good thing is that you've got the guys that started the bowl game last year. Four of those guys are back. You add to, so you got some experience there. You got starting experience there. You've also got a couple, three young guys that you feel good about. That hey, there's going to be an opportunity for those guys. So what you would hope would be the case is that you're going to find five guys for starters, and then sort of a departure from what it's been to this point under Mike Riley and with Mike Kavanaugh coaching the offensive line, maybe they can get in there to where they can rotate some of those guys. Now, typically you don't rotate a center because of the communication issues there, and you want that consistency of communication. But if you can rotate a guard and a tackle, I mean, and maybe you feel like you got enough depth there that you're comfortable not even having to rotate. You've got a guy, a second team right guard and a second team left guard that you feel confident in. But at least, you know, if you've got a guy that can play both sides and you sort of work them, get them on the field too, and get them a little bit of experience, that's the thing, that you've got some depth in the line. You know, I think you have a chance to be good offensively if that line gets the job done. And I think maybe they've got the makings for that. I don't know. As I look at it, you know, David Neville has had some injury issues at right tackle. I know that Cole Conrad sort of finished up the spring at center. I kind of wonder if maybe Cole Conrad could be the guy. He can do just about anything. If Cole Conrad might be a swing tackle, he kind of reminds me of Matt Hoskinson, you know, on that 97 national championship team, because Matt was he wasn't a starter. I don't know if he ever started a game, but everybody just looked at him as if he were a starter, you know, because he could step in there at guard, he could step in there at center. And he got some playing time because he rotated in there, whatever they needed to do. And I think that's a good model for what you would like to have. And I think that Nebraska probably has the players that at some point that you could have.
Mike Babcock's with us, Hail Varsity Radio, talking fall ball as Nebraska gets ready for camp. Babbers, about 2 minutes here. Your thoughts on the Diaco D? A lot of it's been spoken about leading up to media days and at media days, but how great can the defense be? Do they need to be great, I guess, is a better question in 2017.
Well, you know, I wonder how quickly they can be great, because I still think that it's a significant change from what you were doing to go into that 3-4 base defense. And, you know, Diaco is a good teacher. It is kind of a footnote to that whole thing. I read the story of Mike Riley's comments about keeping Trent Bray on staff. And, you know, I was a little bit concerned, because I think Trent Bray is an outstanding coach.
Yes.
Outstanding young coach. And I thought, well, I don't know. Diaco also coaches the linebackers. You know, can Nebraska keep him? And he had an opportunity to go, what was it, to San Diego State?
Yep.
As a coordinator, is that right?
That is.
And he chose to stay. That I was really happy about that, and I think that that's another reason to think that the defense can make this transition. Now, can it be great this year? I don't know, because of the transition part of it. But again, I think the pieces are in place in terms of coaching. Perella, that was a great hire. You know, the secondary, you've got enthusiastic guys back there coaching that secondary. I think that it can be good, but I don't know how much it's going to take in terms of a transition from what they did before.
Mike Babcock's with us, HailVarsity.com and magazine at MDBabs on Twitter. Babbers, will catch up next week. Awesome stuff. Thanks for a few minutes today.
Hey, great talking to you, Smitty.
We love Mike Babcock. Awesome to catch up with him. Rome and Riley, some excerpts from that interview. Lars Anderson coming up, and we'll run down Jerry DiNardo, Big Ten Network on the way.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you, it's Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com. Lars Anderson, 20 minutes away. Jerry DiNardo talks some Nebraska football. Mike Riley caught up with Jim Rome, and we are flagshipped here in Lincoln, FM 101.5, 1480 AM. And Romy's been on since 1998, almost as far back as those throwbacks that are going to be against Wisconsin. But Romy, Jim Rome caught up with Mike Riley. Take a listen.
Mike Riley joining us. You know, Mike, there's so many interesting things in that response that I want to talk to you about. But let me first ask you, when you're coming off a 9-win season and you're entering your third year in charge, do you feel like you're now at a place where you have developed the culture that you want in that program? Or maybe in some ways, do you never, ever reach that place where you stop developing that culture?
Oh, boy, I really believe after doing it a few times, Jim, that it's an ongoing thing. I think it's a 3-4-5 year initial process of This is the way we expect it to look. You know, I've been there before where I've said I don't like how this feels or how this looks, and I think it is a process. I also think it's the football process, too. You know, what we want to establish is what we're good at, who we are, kind of identity type stuff. That's really been fun and interesting for me because we've had – and now we're having a big quarterback transition from, you know, from first of all, from our history at Oregon State with our quarterbacks to a whole different skill set with Tommy Armstrong, and now kind of back to the same kind of skill set we had when I was on the West Coast.
Nebraska head coach Mike Riley joins us. All right, so in terms of quarterback, you've got Tanner Lee taking over now. He comes in with a lot of buzz around him. What do you make of the way, Mike, that he's handled the attention that comes along with being the quarterback at Nebraska?
Beautiful thing about Tanner, Jim, is there's not a lot of drama there. He came in kind of as a guy that was initially really well liked by everybody. He had to sit out the year because of the transfer. And then pretty soon I noticed there was just a lot of respect there, too. So he was well-liked. He's well-respected. Not a lot of drama. Pretty mature and poised kid. I really like him. He reminds me of the transfer situation we had years ago with Matt Moore coming from UCLA to Oregon State. Matt kind of entered in as one of the guys and had a great two-year career with us, and I'm looking forward to seeing if Tanner can do the same kind of thing at Nebraska.
You know, one more thing about Tanner is he had been the starter at Tulane before he transferred, and he ran the scout team last year. It's not something that a lot of guys would necessarily like to do. What did he show you with the way he approached that job?
That was that told me a lot about him. He did that, again, without a lot of drama. He told me he just wanted to do the very best job he could do for our defense. What you said is really a really interesting part, because a guy that's already been a two-year starter in college football program to sit out, hard to do, I would think. And I thought that he handled it about as well as he could have and got himself ready for the offseason and for spring ball. And we had a lot of fun with him in spring. So I think he's handled all that really, really well, really helped our team, really became one of the guys and was elected an offseason captain for our offseason workout program. Did a lot of stuff like that that's pretty impressive.
We're talking Nebraska football with head coach Mike Riley. And Mike, also you brought in Bob Diaco as your defensive coordinator. He is one of my favorite interviews in college football because of his enthusiasm and his intensity. What's it been like to work with him so far?
Gosh, really fun. And what you said about him has been really confirmed here for me, Jim. He is smart. He is detailed. He's a very, very good teacher. I was impressed with the amount of production we got accomplished throughout spring ball. You know, the number of things that we got in, because we changed to the 3-4. I've been intrigued with doing that for a few years. Excited to do that. Great marriage with that thought and getting to hire Bob. He's always thought-provoking for me. He's been now a head coach, so a guy like that on the staff is really good for me. I enjoy talking to him about football programs as well as just the defense that we're implementing here.
You know, Mike, you are relentlessly upbeat. You always have been, and I could tell from the very top of the interview that you are fired up. Always fired up, but it seems like there's a little something extra, maybe, unless I'm reading that wrong, except that the one thing that keeps coming up, everybody around the program is talking about the fire, the motivation you have this year, even more so than normal. My question then is, how do you go about maintaining that drive and that passion for what you do when you've done it as long as you've done it?
I think my age has brought on more of an appreciation for what I do, Jim. I really do appreciate this job. And, you know, there's a lot of layers to it, but when you get down to it, you know, the coaching of football and the work, the working with young men is really something that is a valuable thing to get to do. And I'm really fortunate to do it. And I think getting to continue to do that is really special to me. So I am fired up about it. And I still enjoy all the parts. When I don't, I won't coach anymore. But I'm enjoying every bit of it, looking forward to the start of another football season.
We're talking to Mike Riley. We'll do so for a few more moments. You know, Mike, very sadly, earlier this month, safeties coach Bob Elliott passed away due to complications from cancer. He was truly beloved in the coaching community by his players over the course of a career at schools like Iowa, Notre Dame, Nebraska. Yeah. I know you only worked with him for a short time, but what kind of a person was he?
Man, you know, through the association with Bob Diaco, I got the name Bob Elliott. And of course, I knew who Bob Elliott was. And then, you know, I had many people call me about him, but I really didn't need that. And I'm really glad that we hired Bob Elliott. And I really will miss him because I enjoyed him a ton. The football part of it, his experience in football, his relationship with players was awesome. He loved the players, and the players loved him. And on just a whole other note, besides all that, I think we would have been great friends. I just really liked the guy, and I'm really, really sorry. I'm really thankful that we got to be around him, his wife, Joey. I mean, just great people.
You know, something, the part about you guys would have been really great friends. Safety Aaron Williams talked about the impact that Elliott had on him and how the two of them connected. I mean, I know there was a moment when you saw the two of them having lunch one time. It seemed like they were old friends, didn't it?
Yeah, it really did. It was really a neat picture. And I saw that with Bob right away. He really tried to make that connection. He enjoyed it. I think those things I described about me and my experience in this job and what I now most appreciate, I just saw that come to life with him. And as a position coach, when you can get close to those guys like that, he made an immediate impact. And to go down the dining hall and see that picture, and that was not the only time, but I just remember that day with Aaron. I thought that was pretty special.
Mike Riley, my guest. You know, Mike, last July, Sam Foltz died in a car accident, and we're talking about Bob Elliott, who passed away. And the fact is, I mean, you're a leader of men, a leader of young men, but there's no manual, there's no playbook for dealing with something like this. So as the head coach and the leader of a program of more than 100 players and an entire staff, how do you go about helping them with the grieving process?
Oh boy, you're right about no manual now. I mean, that hit me right between the eyes again this year of back-to-back years losing somebody in the program. And it is hard. And the one thing I note is that I can't say anything. I tell them that. I can't say anything to make you feel better about this. But we together can give each other some support and strength. And we together can understand what this person has meant to us. And so we were fortunate to be around these folks, but it was unfortunate in such a short time.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Well, that was smooth. Great to be with you on Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Jim Rome and Mike Riley there. Mike Babcock this hour. Jerry DiNardo shortly. Lars Anderson 10 minutes away. Chris Schmidt, TJ Henning. Okay, about 15 minutes ago on Twitter, Sip tweeted out his story on the fact that Coach Osborne will no longer have a skybox in Memorial Stadium. I'm like, oh, what? Huh? And to paraphrase and go read the article, that just, I don't need to be doing it, pretty much. Don't need it. Let someone else have it. Who will pay for it? And immediately, I had visions of past ADs, again, past ADs, not current or TO, but previous ADs that would probably charge the dude. Well, you know, you got to pay for that. Well, I helped build them. No, I, it's just touchy. And then Sam McEwen followed up. They just kind of clear this up. You know, how do you read into it? Because you can read too much into things. I'm great at it. And, you know, Sam asked Osborne if this was a sign that there's distance between he and Nebraska. And the quote that Sam got from Coach Osborne, in no way is this a sign of any animosity or any rift with anybody. I wouldn't want people to read into it like that.
Yeah, so don't.
No.
Gosh.
But I mean,
to me, this is just a non-story.
I know it's a non-story, and I told you about it, and you looked at me, and you like just crossed eyes and said, shut up and move on. But you look at it, and you go, is there a message here?
Oh, no, of course not.
No, but there's been insinuations in the past where Osborne, where's he teach his professor courses at? Well, he goes to Creighton to do it because he didn't want to be a part of the Peterson deal. Right?
No, I wouldn't be part of that either.
Obviously. But you just...
Well, like, and I understand, too, when he was upset about the whole I-course hiring it when he didn't know about that was going to happen at all. So, I mean, I get that, but this
Frank
is just
got
like,
whacked, and, you know, I mean, all of that. I mean, it's his baby.
Yeah.
This program.
No, for sure. But anybody else giving up a skybox, this wouldn't be newsworthy at all. But it just happens to be
well,
Tom
but
Osborne.
It's Tom Osborne. And the guy,
and
whether
he's going to get some money revenue from the university for this.
Well, like, think about that. Hey, not only is there a skybox open, but I got just the one for you, T.J. Henning. It was Tom Osborne's skybox.
Yeah, I don't think I can afford that.
Sign
yet.
Right here.
I don't know if I can fit into their donations.
Last there. Part here from Sam McEwen and Sip Story. Osborne will be part of the 1997 national championship celebration. When they celebrate and honor the team with those throwback alternate uniforms against Wisconsin in 1997. There you go.
As he should.
So here's a question. Would you pay extra to have Tom Osborne's former skybox?
No.
Really?
It's still a skybox.
Yeah, but...
Just because he sat in a chair? Like, no. Dude, come on. That's like...
He's had it since 07. There's a probably pretty good chance you're sitting in a place where he threw stuff and maybe swore for the first time in his life.
I get he's like a god
based
in this state, but come
on.
Like,
last
he's just
10
another
years.
Human being. Come on. No way.
That's fine. That's you. You know there's Nebraska fans that would
yeah,
absolutely drop
they
extra
need help.
Coin for it.
They need
wow.
Help.
Someone's just a grumpy monkey today.
I'm just saying.
They need it. Help.
You're going to spend more just because some guy sat in a chair? Get out of here.
It'll happen.
Sadly, it probably will.
I mean, cha-ching right now. Lars Anderson, Bleacher Report, New York Times bestselling author. He'll be joining us. His story coming out on Sam Foltz tomorrow. 10 minutes away. Lars Anderson with us on Hail Varsity.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz _ radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz and TJ Henning.
Back to it, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Welcome in New York Times bestselling author many times over and a journalism professor at Alabama, senior writer, Bleacher Report, and native Nebraskan, Lars Anderson with us at Lars Anderson 71. Lars, thanks for the time. How are you?
I'm doing great. How you doing?
Doing well. Thanks for a few minutes. Big Ten Media Days have come and gone. It's been a week, Lars. It's been a week since Hugh Freeze resigned. I read your story on Coach Freeze. And how open and honest you were with your time covering Ole Miss. And let's spend a minute on that, Lars. It's been a week, but it's still on people's mind here. And you had a program that was climbing the ranks until NCAA issues. Lars, what's your reaction to Coach Freeze and where Ole Miss heads from here?
Yeah, it's still a stunner. And you know, I still think we are probably closer to the start of the story before we are to the end of the story with in terms of what's going to come out of the different sort of things that were happening in Oxford. You know, we know about calls being made to escort services or to sort of ladies of the night, but I think there's going to be more coming out. That's what my gut tells me. It's just completely stunning. I know Freeze has kind of gone into hiding. He probably should at this point. And I think he's actually here in Alabama at a lake house. That's what I've heard anyway. I people have asked me, where do I think he goes from here? Well, I think in general terms, people are pretty forgiving. You look at, Steve Sarkisian, how he was able to kind of rehab his career by being a sort of a nominal assistant at Alabama for a year, and now he's back in the NFL. I wouldn't be surprised if things go well at Auburn this year for Gus Malzahn, and that is largely going to depend on the play of quarterback Jarrett Stidham. If Auburn does well, I wouldn't be surprised if next year, if Freeze doesn't land at Auburn in some capacity, just because he and Gus Malzahn are like literally best friends. They both started in the high school ranks. They've known each other for about 3 decades. Their families vacation together. You know, again, I wouldn't be surprised if that happens, but it's still a stunning fall for Freeze, just especially because of how he so openly wore his Christianity on his sleeve. And yes, there had been sort of rumors that, you know, he wasn't all that he appeared to be, but, you know, you hear that about everybody. I mean, you know, you've been in the business, you hear rumors all the time, but it turns out a lot of these rumors were true.
Lars Anderson, a few minutes with us. Bleacher Report, Hail Varsity Radio at Lars Anderson 71. Lars, what was your impression of you? I mean, when you met him, and you did several in-depth stories on him, was he a guy that was just too likable to ignore, or did you have your suspicions?
Well, I like him very much. When we would be slated to sit down for 15 minutes, we ended up talking for 2.5 hours. And, you know, I liked him very much because he was open, he was honest, So I thought. And, he had this incredibly compelling biography, the fact that, you know, he didn't really play football and he was a high school coach and a lowly assistant high school coach, and the fact that he was able to climb the coaching ladder and become an SEC coach, not only that, beat Alabama 2 of the last 3 years. No other coach in America can say that. He was just, again, he's really dynamic. You can see why he was able to lure kids to Ole Miss, because he shines in a one-on-one situation. He's got the gift of a silver tongue, and so apparently he very likable. Got a lot of people to come to Oxford. And, you know, as I was researching the book on the Manning family, obviously one of the key points of destination in the Manning family history is Oxford, Mississippi. That's where Archie played, and that's where Eli played. And through doing my reporting, again, I heard sort of these rumors about Hugh and about, you know, hey, look into his personal life. But it's... it's hard to check out every single rumor. Mm-hmm. And none of this would have come out. None of this ever would have come to light if the lawsuit by Houston Nutt had never been filed, and if Nutt's lawyer hadn't sort of vigorously gone after Ole Miss and Freeze. And if Freeze just would have simply apologized to Houston Nutt by implying that all the problems at Ole Miss were because of Houston Nutt, who was the previous coach at Ole Miss. So, it's a complicated story, but again, I still think more details will come out.
Lars, you're working on another story that'll be out tomorrow. If you can, give us a little in-depth look on the story you're doing on Mike Sadler and Sam Fultz and Kobe Delahousse.
Yeah, I think this story will resonate with Nebraska fans just because Sam was so wildly popular with you know, just being just so wildly popular among Nebraska fans. Basically did a, you know, about a 1,500 word piece that looks at the 1 year anniversary of the car crash, caught up with the Fultes, caught up with Mike Sadler's family, caught up with Colby, the lone survivor, spent some time talking to Mike Riley. And I think people will be pretty surprised at everything that has happened. I don't want to really give the story away, but I think people will be pretty surprised at how everything is sort of shaken out. But I have profound admiration for the Fultes. You know, I can tell you that Mrs. Fultes, you know, who's a school nurse in Grand Island, she took all of 5 bereavement days, and that's a real testament to her her amazing Midwestern work ethic. And it's certainly, it's not like they have, you know, not they believe, the Fultes, that you can't let your own life be completely shattered by this unimaginable tragedy, that you do have to move on. And I personally admire their strength, and same with the Sadler family. But again, I think the what makes the story so poignant is what has sort of happened with Colby and the two families.
Lars Anderson with us, his story on Sam Fultes, on Sadler, on Kobe Delahousie tomorrow on Bleacher Report. Please read that. I know you will. Lars, college football is nearing, and the SEC still has Bama. Is the SEC weaker going into 2017 as a whole? Is the Big Ten closer? Where's the ACC? How do you stack them? How do you rank them when it comes to the conference supremacy talk?
I mean, I would rank them as one, and I'd rank them as a tie. It was 1 and 1A. And if you look at the coaches of each conference, I would say that it's shifted in the Big Ten's favor simply just by depth of the coaching staff. And I think most people would probably put Mike Riley, like, you know, 4, 5, 6 mm-hmm. in the Big Ten, and when you sort of compare who would the 4, 5, 6 guy be in the SEC, nowhere near the caliber of Mike Riley. You know, so I think there's a lot of sort of unproven coaches in the SEC running big time programs. You know, how good is Kirby Smart going to be at Georgia? I just spent time over in Athens just yesterday, as a matter of fact, and spent a lot of time with Nick Chubb. And for starters, Nick Chubb is a beast. He is really yeah. impressive.
He's pretty awesome.
And he was nowhere near 100% last year. And I really hope that he turns into a heartwarming story this year, and I think he will. But there's coaches like Smart who are running these elite programs who just simply haven't gotten it done yet. And sort of where is it? It's hard to rank them. But I think by and large, like the Big Ten has closed the gap. I will say, though, I think if you just look at the numbers, I think the SEC is still pumping out more NFL players. Mm-hmm. I just think there's more sort of NFL talent in this section of the country where I live than where I used to live in Nebraska, obviously. But I think overall, just the depth of the coaches, I think you give it to the Big Ten. I mean, look, Lovie Smith would probably be like, what, the 10th rated coach in the Big Ten right now? I mean, it's they have guys. There's a lot of really good coaches in that conference now.
You know, and two of the newer coaches, Durkin at Maryland is an urban guy, and then Ash is an urban guy at Rutgers, and you can win at Rutgers. Obviously, it's down now, but we don't know about those guys. And Brohm really did well, and now he's at Purdue, where they've won in the past as well. You got to get that key quarterback, but they've gotten quarterbacks there. And so, you know, I think the Big Ten, you're right on when it comes to depth. I'm just curious about the SEC with Auburn and Malzahn. They've been really good, but it's great expectations and don't be down. LSU under Coach O, can they ascend? Arkansas and Belum, I think they're physical. I think they're good, but they're in a monster division. And then the two Mississippi schools with Mullen, can he kind of reload? And Ole Miss is a mess. And then you look at the East. I mean, McElwain needs a quarterback. Muschamp has, I think, things going okay at Carolina. And then Tennessee has not lived up to the hype. Kentucky and Vanderbilt, they've had a couple of upsets here and there. So, I think the conference is good, really good, and I don't think there's a week off in the SEC. I think right now you can more times than not play your best football and beat a Rutgers, per se, or go beat a Kansas in the Big 12, or Arizona, what are they like in the Pac-12? I don't think there's an off week in the SEC, and it'll soon be that case in the Big Ten. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I agree. And I'm in the SEC, I'm really fascinated with Auburn. I think Auburn has a chance to be as good as winning the national championship, or they could be a 500 team. And it's amazing. There's so many lives and livelihoods that are tied to Jarrett Stidham right now. Jarrett Stidham, to me, is, again, he's also one of the most fascinating guys in the country. Nobody knows anything about him. He's a transfer quarterback from Baylor. And he just absolutely lit it up in the spring. Gus Malzahn, I mean, he's been fooled before. Gus Malzahn was the one who was in charge of the Jeremy Johnson hype machine. Mm-hmm. Jeremy Johnson, if you'll recall, was voted by the media as all SEC quarterback, a Heisman Trophy front runner, and then the guy was just terrible. When the lights came on, he couldn't read a defense. He absolutely could not read a defense. And how Malzahn missed so badly on that is just stunning. And now you have Malzahn saying the same types of things about Jarrett Stidham. He is, he's number one in the fan club, waving the pom-poms. And look, if he misses on Stidham, he's gone. The whole staff will be gone. They'll do a complete rebuild on the Plains there in Auburn. But if he's right about Stidham, they have so much talent on both sides of the ball at the line of scrimmage. We're talking about a team that could upset. Not, it wouldn't even be a big upset to beat Alabama. I mean, it would be. It's a team that would be capable of winning the national title. Like I said, I mean, they could be so good or so bad based on one kid who is completely unproven in the SEC, and just so much is tied up into him.
Lars, before we say goodbye, Lars Anderson with his Bleacher Report. His new book, The Quarterback Whisperer with Bruce Arians, is out at LarsAnderson71 on Twitter. And he has a story on Fultz and Kobe Delahousse and, of course, the Sadler family coming tomorrow on Bleacher Report. Did you get into any football with Coach Riley when you talked with him?
No, we just sort of kept it on Sam and Coach Riley did love that kid. Yeah. And in a lot of ways, you know, Sam, he represents Nebraska football. Like what it means to be Nebraska football. A small town kid really just wants to be a farmer and goes to Nebraska as a walk-on, earns a scholarship, looks like he's going to be a 15-year NFL mm-hmm. player. And the thing is, he wasn't even most concerned. His dream wasn't to be a 15-year NFL player. His dream was to go back to the family farm in Greeley and work with the cattle and the cow and the corn. Mm-hmm. He sort of embodied that childhood dream that so many in Nebraska have. And the fact that it was extinguished at a young age just makes it heartbreaking.
Well, it is. And Lars, thanks for your coverage with this story. Tomorrow, Bleacher Report on Sam Fultz, Mike Sadler, Kobe Delahousse. Thanks for giving us a few minutes to talk some SEC Big Ten perspective. And thanks for your time and sharing your thoughts on U-Freeze. Lars, we'll catch up again, man. Kickoff just around the corner here, less than 38 days.
Thank goodness the college football's almost back.
Absolutely. Take care, bud.
Take care.
You know, it doesn't get much better than Lars Anderson in his storytelling, either writing or when it comes to documentaries. I mean, he's just as good as there is. And be looking for that tomorrow on Bleacher Report with Lars Anderson and his story. 6-month online subscription yours right now to HailVarsity.com. The ultimate online fan experience with HailVarsity.com, a message board community you want to be a part of. Great premium content reserved for subscribers online, and inside info and recruiting analysis, Greg Smith and company, tremendous. Caller 4, caller 5, right now, 466-3776, 466-3776, 1-800-825-5865, caller 4, caller 5, right now, a 6-month online subscription, the ultimate online fan experience, caller 4, caller 5 now, 466-3776, 800-825-5865.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you. It's Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, TJ Henning, we welcome in. With the Big Ten Network, the coach, LSU, Colorado, assistant of Colorado for a number of years, helped build that program, Indiana, and Vanderbilt. Jerry DiNardo with us at Jerry DiNardo on Twitter. Coach, thanks for the time. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thanks, Chris.
Appreciate it. How were media days? We watched you and enjoyed it, and you had all 14 teams come through and get a chance to say hey. And let's start off with what was just kind of your general overview of Monday and Tuesday in Chicago? What'd you take away?
I think my biggest general takeaway is, you know, the new practice rule. I think the NCAA kind of missed the mark on this. Most coaches are not really going to use the formula. I mean, they're going to be within the formula. They have to. It's a rule. But most coaches have been very creative adjusting to the new rule. So I found that very interesting. So as a group, I think that was the biggest takeaway. David Blau was just tremendous. I'm sure you've seen it. Mm-hmm. The quarterback at Purdue. Probably the best speech I've heard from a player, and I've been to 13 or 14 of these things. So I'd say those two things, maybe.
Coach, you look at Nebraska here, and you had a chance to catch up with Coach Riley. You had a chance to get a view of the players that were there, especially Tanner Lee. And let's talk about Coach Riley and how. What was your vibe from him when you had a chance to talk to him? I know he's excited, and I know there's kind of a wait and see with Nebraska nationally and quite frankly, in some corners locally here. But what type of sense did you get from Coach Riley heading into this year? Is he pretty confident?
You know, he's excited. You know, I don't know that he's confident or not confident. I mean, I didn't get that from him, so it'd be unfair for me to characterize that part of it. But, you know, I simply asked them. I mean, I didn't watch any of what we've done, so I don't know if they put everything on there. But I asked them, you know, you change schemes, you change coordinators. Does this slow progress down, which no fan wants to hear? And, you know, you and I have talked about this. And, you know, he made an obvious statement. You know, I made these major changes to move the program forward, you know, and so – you know, I think we're all thinking the same thing, including Coach Riley. I mean, are they going to be better with Bob with the 30 defense? I mean, it was interesting that, and I remember when Mike worked for me at Colorado at my camp, you know, he was at Northern Colorado. He was a defensive coach. And when he was in Canada, he was the only one running the 30 front. So I forgot that. So that was something I took from the meetings. But you can't have that many changes that they've had there in the third year without saying, you know, a little risky, yes, but the risk is worth what he hopes that the reward will be.
You know, what I found fascinating was him talking about the concept of time, be it culture, be it time to work with kids, be it time to kind of get his ducks in a row here. And when he told you that, you know, I didn't make this change for us to take a step back, I think he's trying to kind of, you know, take a step forward, obviously, and you know what it's like to play against Nebraska and the expectations at Nebraska. But let's shift that discussion point from the fact that he did it to now what, and let's define what is this defense? What's it have to be? What do you think it has to be based on what this offense can be with that fit at quarterback?
Well, you know, I think the value of the defense, and again, I got into it with Coach Riley about him and Paul Christ, and I did the same thing to Paul. I asked them both that they wish they were in different conferences because they are very close friends. And you look at Brett Bielema, he's going to the 30 front. Now, everyone says that one of the reasons is it's hard to recruit four down linemen, and that is true. But at Nebraska, you should be able to recruit anybody. I think what he expects from the defense is to be more aggressive, to maybe be more intense on the field. But there's an unpredictability, Chris, with this defense. You know, the greatest asset of this defense is with a four-man front, you know who the four rushers are. Mm-hmm. The offensive line points to the fifth person, which is a linebacker, and that's who the offensive line is responsible for. What makes this defense so difficult for the offense to block, it's unpredictable which linebacker is either going to run through a gap on a run play or rush on a pass play. So that's what I would expect from the defense. I would expect them to play with more intensity, hopefully miss more tackles, hopefully have less missed assignments, but at the end of the day, be very unpredictable, like Wisconsin has. I mean, look at Wisconsin's defensive players. You can certainly have the same type of athletes in Lincoln, Nebraska. And this Wisconsin defense has been tremendous, and a lot of it is scheme.
The scheme and the fit with the players and personnel, it's been tremendous.
Correct.
For Wisconsin. Jerry Donato, a few minutes with us here, Hale Varsity Radio. Coach, with this Nebraska transition, and Coach Chris Weber's talked about it, and they're excited about it. I think they really will enjoy Coach Diaco. That's the vibe right now. I mean, camp will start, and it'll be crazy, so the time will tell. But right now, the buy-in seems high. That's the word, and it's a storyline. And just the fact that this defense is going to be aggressive like you talked about. The terminology, though, is there any way to – lack of a better term, shortcut it so they can play fast and pick it up quicker? Because that's the thing that you hear from guys who've played and coached, is that it's going to be the terminology that'll hold the defense back the first year. Not the ability, not the want to, not the understanding, but just the application of it. Can you shortcut it? Can that project be done by Diaco?
You know, Chris, I guess I'm surprised that I hear you say that. I've never heard that. And, you know, I could be certainly missing the mark here, but I've never heard it put that way. The terminology slows down any development. Iowa has changed their offensive terminology, even though, you know, basically Brian Ferentz has taken over offensively. It's basically the same offense, but they're changing. They have their reasons to change terminology. I think terminology is the easy thing to teach. I don't think it slows down. These are bright kids. A lot of them learn conceptually much better than they learn with books, and terminology is concepts. And so I guess I don't have much of an opinion about that because I've never really heard that would do anything to speed it up or slow it down.
Okay. Well, you're shifting responsibility, and you're going to have a different language because it's a 3-4, not a 4-3. Do you think it'll be able to be picked up on and execute? I guess from a playbook standpoint, do you kind of measure what the kids can do and then maybe hold off on the rest of the playbook and just get good at certain things? Or by mid-year, do you have to kind of be all in with it on the defensive side? How do you handle that?
Well, you know, it just depends on your philosophy. You know, Don Brown at Michigan, I mean, he's very, very multiple. And so he was only at Michigan 1 year, right? He just got there last year. He's very multiple. So his philosophy is, I don't worry about how much we have to teach him. Mm-hmm. They're kind of that way on both sides of the ball at Michigan. You know, I don't know what Bob's style is. I mean, I understand the style of the defense, but I don't know whether he doesn't worry about too much. Whether he's more a fundamentalist than he is a schemologist. You know, I don't know. It just depends on his philosophy. I'll say this. To me, the most difficult thing about the transition is recruiting. Because if you're a four-down front, okay, then you probably have you're probably 12 scholarships with the D line, right? If you're a three down lineman, then you have 9 scholarships. Basically, your scholarships are 3 deep in most positions. And so, to me, one of the most difficult things will be, other than how fast do we go teaching a new system. If Mark Banker was back, this would be the 3rd year he could teach more. I understand that. But to me, it's more, do we have enough linebackers in the program? Do we have enough down linemen with this new configuration? So that's going to take a little bit of time.
Did you have a chance to talk to Coach Riley about the off-season change, the off-season workout program? The guys started practice in the afternoon opposed to the mornings.
You know, Chris, I think he was one of the few coaches I didn't ask about it. So I don't know. I don't know what he's doing. Is he taking all 29 practices? You know, Urban reports Thursday and Friday, and then he's giving them Saturday and Sunday off.
That's what I saw. My point, the summer sessions, to be more specific, the guys had a chance to sync up with coaches and work in the afternoon in the heat, more of a grueling off-season program. That's the response from the players when they've been asked about it. Do you like this shift? And were you a guy, Coach, about 2 minutes left here, that preferred to have the summer workouts in the afternoon so there were more of the opportunity to gut some hard practices out?
You know, it's interesting you ask that. You know, with the heat in Louisiana, you know, regardless of how hard our guys worked, when they came into camp, we had a dehydration problem, and we were sticking guys with IVs, especially the low-fat skilled guys.
Mm-hmm.
And one summer I remember, probably the last summer I was there, otherwise I'd still be doing it, because I asked the doctors, I said, why are we working so hard in the summer and still, you know, sticking guys in camp with IVs? And they came to a conclusion that, you know, when you don't wear a helmet in workouts, your body gets to, you know, physically some of the heat is released through the head, and they were going through all this with me. And then they put the helmets on in the camp, and the body has to readjust how to dispose of the heat, if you will. So I said, let's ask the NCAA if we can work out with our helmets on. I know they're going to probably say no because they're going to think I'm scrimmaging in the summer. This is how ridiculous they are. Anyway, long story short, we wrote them. We said, here's our evidence that we can cut down on the IVs if we work out in the summer with helmets, meaning the strength coach, not the coaches. Sure enough, they said yes, and we cut back the IVs significantly.
It's a good story, Coach. That's a great adjustment. Jerry DiNardo with us, Hail Varsity Radio, at Jerry DiNardo on Twitter. Coach, we'll catch up here in a couple of weeks, and we'll do this again. Thanks for the time, and thanks for the insight. Appreciate it.
You bet, Chris. Thank you.
Take care. There he is, Jerry DiNardo with us, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Appreciate Coach giving us a few minutes. I'm almost certain of it. I don't think I had my data wrong with terminology being key, but he's coached and that's not been an issue. So a little rub there. It's all good, though. Good to get caught up with Coach. And we'll give you a chance at some Salt Dog tickets shortly. Mike Leach doesn't like hot dogs, our favorite pirate. You'll hear that. Nick Saban hates the early signing period. So he said to ESPN, that on the way with Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And we're back.
Fellas, you think we could listen to the radio?
On Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
Big thanks to Jerry DiNardo, Big Ten Network, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine. Lars Anderson kicked off hour number 2. And you have Nick Saban doing the ESPN car wash. You have Mike Leach, Pac-12 Media Days. And I know people like this. I'm not one of them. But there are those who just can't handle the dog.
I've never lied. I didn't like hot dogs when I was a kid, and I think that some of that started with when I was a real young kid. You know, I'd have bologna sandwich after bologna sandwich, and so then anything that even remotely resembled bologna, I hated. And you know, everybody says go to the ball game and eat a hot dog, not me. And no, it's not a sandwich. You know, I'm not into hot dogs, and with all due respect to those that are, but you know, yeah, they can have mine, so there'll be more for them.
I'll take it, coach.
Yeah. And I mean, if you're trading a hot dog for a brat, I get it. But he seems to me like Leach would pound a hot. We'll have to get him on next week after media days.
I grew up on bologna sandwiches, too, and I like those. And I still love hot dogs.
I hate bologna sandwiches, and I know they're kind of the same thing.
I haven't had one since I was like 10. So
yeah, because you ate all the bologna in America when you were there.
Maybe.
You had some people torqued about the old T.O.
About the what?
Coach Osborne comments.
Oh. Well, yeah, I was kind of rambling. I accidentally said some guy, I guess. You know, he's not some guy, but my main point was just don't pay extra money just because he sat in a chair. Like,
TJ, there are fans of this program that would, if you wore a Milosh from a Seinfeld tennis episode sweatband.
Yeah.
And had a picture of your face on it.
Yeah.
People would pay extra for your wristband.
Oh, for sure. They're probably the grown adults who are getting autographs this weekend.
That might be. Does that bother you too?
Yeah.
You got his stoic little 6,000-yard desert stare going on right now.
Yeah.
You talk about adults getting autographs.
I don't care for that.
How old were you like when you stopped asking for autographs? 12?
No.
15?
Yeah, I guess. Okay. I can't remember
the last time. Let me ask you this. Hypothetically.
Okay.
Garnett is waiting in line for popcorn at the Tuesday night $5 movie night that you go frequent.
Yeah.
And he's there. Do you grab a napkin and a pen? Do you ask Garnett for an autograph?
See, today's thing for my age isn't autographs, it's a photo.
Today's thing for my age. You'll ask him for a selfie.
But like not a selfie. Somebody would take a photo of us, unless I couldn't find somebody. But I know, like, today, that's what everybody does, so then I might not ask him. I just, like, I love you, man. I wish I could have watched it more, but...
That's creepy.
Yeah, no. Well, because he's, like, my idol. But if, like, another grown adult sees...
There'd be tears of joy in your eyes if that actually happened next Tuesday.
I guess I just don't like it because they're college athletes. Like, they're 18, 19. Like, if they're pro athletes, I'm probably more okay if you got an autograph, but still not.
I get the biggest kick out of Junior. I mean, he worms his way into autograph zone, and every time he goes to a baseball game, he gets like 3 signatures.
Yeah, but he's a kid. He should do that.
He's a kid, and he loves it. I'll sit back 100 rows with a beer and watch him go to work, and then we go on eBay. I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
This whole is hot dog a sandwich.
You
want to
walk home? You're going to get that autograph of Jeter.
So Leach isn't a hot dog fan, which I get, but are you this whole hot dog sandwich thing?
Where did it start? What happened with it?
Oh, that's just a couple years ago thing. Like, it just takes a life of its own, but I think they're separate.
No is the answer.
Yeah. It's called a hot dog, not a sandwich.
It's a hot dog.
Yeah.
It's a hot dog. So Leach hates, who do you think hates what more? You think Leach hates hot dogs more, or do you think Saban hates signing day?
Right, I think we've taken some of the things that we've used in basketball that have had some success, and we're trying to apply them in football, but I think they're totally two different games.
Mm-hmm.
Football is a developmental game. So if we continue to move this recruiting calendar up, and we make the signing date before a guy's senior year, a player that develops in his senior year, which for bigger players is not uncommon at all because their balance, body control, everything catches up. I mean, we have players that develop while they're at Alabama, right, from their freshman year to their junior year. So those guys are going to get bypassed because we're going to be forced to make decisions about every player in their sophomore and junior year, which won't be fair to the late developer. And the other sort of consequence of this is we saw this year for the first time two players did not play on their team in college in bowl games because of NFL. I'm not criticizing these players for that, right? But that's probably not a great thing for college football. If we start signing players before their senior year in high school, you're going to see the same thing happen with high school players. They're not going to play their senior year in high school because they think that might jeopardize their opportunity to go someplace and play in college. So I don't think that's good for high school football or high school football coaches. So there's some consequences in all this that I'm not necessarily for, because I don't think accelerating the recruiting calendar is beneficial to all players.
He's afraid to miss. and he's not missed because he's getting the best, and they play early and often, and they're good, and they can leave by their junior year.
He just worries about stuff too much.
No, but
like, he just needs to let it go.
Here's the thing. He is on edge all the time, and he takes 2 seconds to take a breath and smell the roses, and then he's on to the next conquest.
Hi.
Let's give it a little more breathing room.
Hi.
It's all right. He got West Virginia there for a second, all right? Mm-hmm. Listen, I look at Saban, and he's right. And think about this. What Andy Markowski beat into our heads? Big men take a while to develop. That's in basketball. Well, big men take a while to develop, too, in football, specifically the offensive line and defensive line. Jay Moore has said that repeatedly on the show. They just do. And he outlined why. Your body catching up and the coordination catching up and being a highly fine-tuned athlete to go to work and then battering ram it for 65 to 95 snaps. He's right. He's absolutely right. Where you're just going to have way too many misses by going early too often. And then the molehill or mountain question is this. Are guys going to start skipping their senior year of high school once you get that scholarship locked up and being a junior? And as a college program, there's no way you want them skipping their senior year.
So Sean Eicher shouldn't have fought for this early signing period at all.
Well, I think from a Nebraska standpoint, the ability to get paid visits on campus earlier, the better. Period. You're at a disadvantage. So, yeah, it varies. But I think Saban's right. I think Saban's right where you're going to be prone to some error with your evaluation because you don't have the full story on the kid. And two skill guys, Quincy Enunwa, Kenny Bell, senior film guys. Amir Abdullah, senior film guys. I don't want to call them late bloomers, but they weren't as prominent. But man, did they pack a wallop when they got to Nebraska. All right, your chance at Salt Dog tickets coming up. Hail Varsity will wind down a Thursday, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Big thanks today to Lars Anderson, Bleacher Report, his story on Sam Fultz tomorrow. Mike Babcock was amazing. Coach Jerry DiNardo, his thoughts on Big Ten Media Days in Nebraska and that transition to defense. If you missed any part of the show, you can log on HailVarsity.com. Get the podcast. Go to iTunes for the podcast or the ESPN Lincoln app. The app is free to download. Take us with and give the podcast a try versus the playlist. Give Sauter Heyman a try. With Pure Grown Diamonds, birthday, anniversary, whatever the case, special occasion when it's time to go all out and not feel like you spent going all out. Sauter Heyman there for you and the exclusive dealer in Nebraska of Pure Grown Diamonds. Pure Grown Diamonds are 100% real diamonds. They're grown in a lab, and that can save you some dinero, 10 to 40% less than traditional earth mined diamonds. They're eco-friendly, and they are there for you at 12th and O downtown Lincoln, South Point Pavilion, Lincoln Rod West, and Grand Island. Find Sauter Heyman today. Go see Rick and the gang, sauterheyman.com. Speaking of diamonds, we want to send you to Haymarket for a VIP session for VIP tickets to Monday?
Correct.
Wow, I guessed correct. Monday, seats, VIP seats for you. If you call 5-466-3776, 466-3776, 1-800-825-5865, caller 5, a VIP session for you at Haymarket with the Salt Dogs on Monday. 4 tickets for you, VIP seats right now, caller 5-466-3776, 466-3776, 1-800-825-5865. As TJ answers the phone, we'll get you loaded up tomorrow. on the program. Derek Peterson will join us, newest member of HaleVarsity.com and magazine. Excited to get caught up with Derek. He's from Oklahoma with Nebraska ties, and he is back from Chicago, so Derek will join us. We will also run down Bill Dolman on the program. The Pride of Fairbury will be with us. We'll also get caught up with Chad Kelsey, newest member to the Nebraska Football Hall of Fame. We are chasing Zach Taylor. And maybe a surprise visit from Klausburn. That could be in the works. That might be in the works. So tune in tomorrow at 4 for Hail Varsity. Some good stuff on HaleVarsity.com. You want to get caught up on the alternate uniform slash throwback for the Wisconsin game. Great story by Brandon Vogel there. Some news and notes and thoughts as camp gets closer for Nebraska football. Sunday, man, is when they start rocking. Sunday morning. Excited for that. And don't forget, Lars Anderson will have his story on Mike Sadler, Sam Fultz, Colby De La Husse on Bleacher Report tomorrow. Lars was kind enough to join us in this hour. So we want to say good night, goodbye, enjoy. And enjoy time with your family for sure tonight if you have a shot. And good luck to you on those Salt Dog tickets. TJ's got a winner. Hey, we appreciate you listening in. 4 o'clock tomorrow, find us on Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HaleVarsity.com, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. TJ is off to, well, research the price of skyboxes. We'll be back at you tomorrow at 4. Take care. Thanks.